their own web-based services. But some worry that the way money is raised to complete UCW's construction could place limits on its future. Illinois Public Media's Jim Meadows has this report.
Last month, UCW organizers announced plans to apply for funding from startup company Gigabit Squared to complete construction of their broadband network. Gigabit Squared, which specializes in helping to develop such networks, is holding a competition among college towns that are part of the nationwide GigU project. Urbana Alderman Brandon Bowersox Johnson is on UC2B's policy committee.
So if we don't win the competition, we will try to find other private partners who would build out the network in Champaign, Urbana, and Savoy under these same terms, the same pricing and the same four-year commitment to build an order of neighborhoods and build the whole town in 4 years.
Government grants paid for the first part of UC2B's construction, the fiber rings that are the backbone of its network, connections to local institutions, and connections to customers in broadband-poor neighborhoods. But now UC2B is looking for private investors to help them complete the build-out. And that's causing some of UC2B's supporters to worry about the project's pledge to maintain open access, that is, keeping the network open to any business that wants to use it to provide services. Urbana Alderman Charlie Smythe.
The big concern is if we don't nail down this open access issue is that 5 years down the road, we could have somebody basically say, well, we're bankrupt or we're selling the system. And under the selling of the system, they could sell to Verizon, Comcast, AT&T, and we're back to square one without real competition, without open access.
Smythe says most telecom networks like Comcast and AT&T don't offer open access because they can make more money selling services on their broadband networks than by opening the network for others to use. But the alderman argues that open access is essential for the nation's economic well-being. Smythe says communities need broadband networks that are like their road networks, supported by all and open to all.
The government isn't making money off of the roads. If anything, we're losing money on those roads. But everybody else, everybody who uses those roads, uses them for their own economic purposes, whether it's driving to work or running your trucks that are delivering freight or moving goods and services up and down for various companies. It is an economic backbone of the country. You know, it is, I think that's one of the definitions of infrastructure.
Gigabit Squared promises open access, but Smythe wants more assurance that their promise will be a lasting one. One of the organizers of UC2B thinks that concern can be addressed. Mike Smeltzer with Sites, the University of Illinois Information Technology Unit, says because UC2B already owns the fiber backbone of its network, they'll have some leverage when they negotiate a contract with Gigabit Squared or any other private investor.
We would enter into a contractual relationship with either Gigabit Squared or another private provider to use those rings, but it wouldn't be a lifetime commitment. It might be a five-year commitment. And if we weren't happy with the way that either Gigabit Squared or a successor company was providing the services, we could just not renew that contract and use the rings, which kind of puts them out of business.
Urbana Council members are working on a resolution that spells out their concerns about UC2B and restates their commitment to open access. The resolution urges UC2B to explore alternatives to private investment, including the possibility of municipal and co-op ownership. The latter is being promoted by Peter Folk, the CEO of Volo Broadband. Folk says he wants to see UC2B succeed, in part because his own business could use it to expand the scope of its broadband service. Folk's plan to preserve local control for UC2B is for community members to share in ownership and investment.
There are hundreds, almost 1,000 actually, cooperative power companies in the nation, and they operate on that model where you have a share in that company when you become a member of the co-op, and it's that equity that you bring to the table that allows the company to build out its network. And that model has worked very well in the power industry, and we think it can work very well in the broadband industry.
While Folk develops his co-op proposal, the Urbana City Council is scheduled to take a final vote on its open access resolution tonight. Meanwhile, UC2B plans to hook up its first residential customer sometime this week. The City of Champaign, the lead agent in UC2B operations, last week put out a request for information call to potential investors in the broadband network. The only identified potential investor so far, Gigabit Squared, is expected to announce in the fall whether Champaign-Urbana is one of the college towns to win its competition for funding. I'm Jim Meadows, Illinois Public Media.
Exports of goods and services have been one of the bright spots in the lackluster U.S. economy lately, growing much faster than almost anything else. But other economies are slowing. NPR's David Green talks now to David Wessel, economics editor of the Wall Street Journal, about just how important exports are to the American economy.
We have a $15 trillion economy now, and we export $2 trillion a year. That's twice the size of the American auto industry. And the whole game plan for the U.S. economy, if there is one, has been to increase exports while we spend a little more carefully at home to pay off all the debts we took on during the 2000s and recover from the housing mess. And this strategy has been working so far.
That's a pretty stunning number. I just want to make sure I understand it. The amount that we are exporting is double the size of everything that the American auto industry produces.
That's correct.
Well, as we mentioned, growth is slowing in many parts of the world, and I guess I wonder what is the effect going to be on what has been an export boom for the moment?
It's not going to be good. Exports have done pretty well in the first half of 2012, but when your customers don't do so well, they don't buy so much. The International Monetary Fund recently updated its economic forecast, and it said that the global recovery, which was not strong to start with, has shown signs of further weakness. And that's particularly true in Europe, of course, which buys about one of every $5 of our exports. The UK and the continent are a recession. That's depressing demand around the world. It's bound to show up in our export numbers later this year. It's already causing big problems for the export powerhouses in Asia, like China and South Korea, because Europe is a really big customer for them.
Well, you mentioned China, and I mean, we've been hearing for some years now about the growth miracle in China and also the rest of Asia. I mean, can they still pick up the slack, or we're seeing some real problems there also?
Well, we are seeing some problems there. Part of the economic challenge we have right now is that almost every country in the world is trying to increase its exports at the same time. I mean, that's the only way out, people think. But someone has to be buying more if every country wants to be selling more. For a long time, that was the U.S. It isn't anymore. It would be nice if this were the moment where Chinese and Korean and Malaysian and Thai consumers picked up the slack. But there are signs that domestic demand in Asia is slowing as well. A couple big companies in the U.S. that make construction equipment, Caterpillar, Cummins, and Deere, have in the last couple of weeks said that their hopes for selling a lot more stuff in China have been dashed and their sales are actually down. And one of my colleagues in Hong Kong, Alec Frangos, is reporting that you can see the Chinese cutting back on sales of clothes, that the lines of the Louis Vuitton stores in Hong Kong are less long even, and Chinese tourism and consumer spending, which has shown up at the baccarat tables at casinos in Macau and Singapore, is beginning to shrink. So they, too, seem to be pulling back.
It just sounds like the number of options for countries that can pick up the slack is just shrinking.
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk Europe for a moment. You said that Europe buys one out of every $5 in U.S. exports. There's been a dark cloud there economically for some time. Any signs that that continent can get its act together soon?
Well, right now, Europe is on vacation. They have it scheduled so you can't have a crisis in August, they hope.
They hope.
But there is the outlines of a strategy. If Spain can get a loan from the rest of Europe and agree to some stiff conditions, then in a big change, the European Central Bank has said it's willing to step in and keep the economic engine going, much as the Federal Reserve has here. But there's a lot up in the air. There's a constitutional decision coming in September in Germany. Greece is having trouble meeting the conditions that the rest of Europe set for it, and there's renewed talk that they'll have to leave the euro. Tensions among the 17 countries that share the currency remain, and there's this ever-present risk that there's some miscalculation and accident, and we have a really big financial crisis.
Well, let's come back home before we leave you and talk about the United States. We said the exports, one bright spot in a tough economy. Are there any other bright spots that you're starting to see elsewhere?
Yeah, actually, the incoming data has been for a change on the encouraging side. Let's be clear, the economy is still growing very slowly, probably too slowly to bring unemployment down much for the rest of this year. But the July numbers are looking reasonably good. Retail sales were surprisingly good. People seem to be shopping again. And we see from the recent data that businesses have accumulated fewer goods in their inventories. And that's sometimes seen as a harbinger of increased production and more jobs ahead.
David Wessel, economics editor of the Wall Street Journal. He spoke with NPR's David Green.
WILL programming is made possible by Community Concierge Magazine. Every issue includes an event calendar, attractions, and maps, as well as a business and shopping guide. Community Concierge Magazine is distributed throughout East Central Illinois and always presents the CU area at its best.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 20th of August, 2012. It was on this day, 1940, Winston Churchill delivered a speech to the House of Commons with the famous line, "Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few." It was in the midst of the Battle of Britain. He was referring to the Royal Air Force, who had held off the German Luftwaffe. Winston Churchill wrote all of his own speeches before he became Prime Minister. He was considered somewhat old-fashioned, but after the war began, his dramatic style fit the mood of the country. His father, Lord Randolph Churchill, served in Parliament and was famous for his spontaneous speeches, but Winston Churchill labored over every one. He researched them, planned out the speech in his head, dictated it aloud, revised it, and rehearsed it over and over, sometimes sitting in a bathtub. It's the birthday of the poet Heather McHugh, San Diego, 1948, who said, "I have always lived on waterfronts. If you live on the edge of an enormous mountain or an enormous body of water, it's harder to think of yourself as being so important. That seems useful to me, spiritually." Went to Harvard when she was 16, sold her first poem to The New Yorker a year later. Her books of poetry include Hinge and Sign and Upgraded to Sirius. It's the birthday of H.P. Lovecraft, born Providence, Rhode Island, 1890, who wrote science fiction, fantasy, and horror. His father had a nervous breakdown when he was a boy. Lovecraft was raised by his mother, two aunts, and his grandfather, who all lived together. The books of H.P. Lovecraft, still widely available, books like The Dreams in the Witch House and other weird stories. H.P. Lovecraft, who said, "I never ask a man what his business is, for it never interests me. What I ask him about are his thoughts and dreams." And it's the birthday of the novelist Jacqueline Suzanne, born Philadelphia, 1918, came to New York to become an actress, did some commercials, had bit parts, worked as a model,